Blog Talk Radio.
Either you have something to give, either you have something to say, either you have someone to love, or why? Are we here? There is a time for giving back. There is a need for one's own lack. There is freedom in commitment's lap. So why? Do we?
This is Monica Richardson, and this is Blog Talk Radio, Safe Recovery. Tonight is February 25th, 2020. It's been a long time since I did a show. Hi, everybody. Tonight, we're going to have a really special guest, and I'm going to bring him right on. His name is Mike, and he is a pilot. So let me just tell you that you can go in the chat room. You have to set it up. I haven't done this in a while. But anyway, you can go in the chat room and you can talk there. All right, so here we go. Let's bring on Mike.
How are you?
Hey, hi there.
I'm
good.
Mike, and I appreciate your asking me to be in tonight. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely a lot nicer to talk to you than just sit here and talk to the airwaves by myself. I have done it, but yeah. So let's. I have been really kind of gone down this rabbit hole and seen what's happened with pilots and some nurses and a few doctors, but more pilots than anything else. So I want to just say that we want to educate the pilots, and I think this goes for nurses and doctors, although it's a little different. It's really punitive with the doctors as well. I know that there's a nurse. I want to just give a shout out to a nurse that fought it in British Columbia, and that's Byron. What's Byron's last name?
Byron Wood.
Byron Wood. That's right. And so he won. It's set a precedent there that they can't be forced to AA or AA rehab. But he said if he still wanted to practice, he would have to jump through some hoops. So he's moving on. But it does set a precedent, and we do want to change things. Let's do a little bit of history of the HIMSS program. Do you know the history?
I do. The HIMSS program, first of all, it's kind of an esoteric acronym. It stands for Human Innovational Motivational Study. And really, it doesn't mean anything. I don't know where it actually came from. But really what it deals with is pilots that have been identified with substance abuse problems. It helps provide a framework for individual companies to set up their own HIMSS program, which just brings people together that the FAA trusts in order to get these people back to work. Whereas in the past, it didn't happen much, and mostly because the FAA is just very difficult to deal with. They're hard to get hold of. They tend not to return calls. And as weird as that sounds, that's enough to shut down careers. It's done it before. And when they don't know what to do, they tend to just not do anything, which means you can't work. If you lose your medical and you need answers, they just won't get back to you. Now, they have a trusted few people, doctors, psychiatrists, psychologists. In the case of hearts, there's certain heart surgeons and things. In the case of MS, a quick side note, if you have MS, you can actually fly. But MS doesn't have a sudden episode. The episodes come on slowly. So the most important thing is, if that person is psychologically sound enough to turn themselves in and not fly, they're allowed to fly. So it's not too much different than substance abuse. It's a mental thing.
Wow, wow. So it is, and it started in the early 70s, as far as I understand, and it's never changed, and it's based on Alcoholics Anonymous and its ideology. And when I called, I'll just like say this part and then, you know, we can go forward. But when I started to call the HIMS program, and you go on their website, HIMSprogram.com, and then you see like who they are and who's the head of it. And I called, and these guys have all become steppers, which I call them, AA members themselves, pretty brainwashed. Human Intervention Motivation Study was spearheaded by the Airline Pilots Association, a labor union, and funded by the National Institute for Alcohol. Whoa, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow, that's the,
now,
the background. So they
came later from a different source, but that was the original source of funding.
Yeah. So originally it was designed to test a program for dealing. Anyway, enough about that. So what, you know, I am in these groups. I want to put a plug out for anyone who needs support. There's support for pilots. You'd have to come through me first, and then we're going to vet you and make sure whoever you are. But then I have all these Facebook groups, Leaving AA, Deprogramming, and I created one for pro-AA people to debate with us ex-steppers. And they don't understand. What people say to me, and these are even like friends of mine who are not in AA, but they only know peripheral, which means they know very little about it, right? They're like, well, I don't want a drunk pilot. I said, wait a minute. Did you not listen to what I just said? They don't even hear anything else. All the men that I've spoken to and women were not flying and, I would say, like drinking and flying. Drinking and flying, drinking and driving. They weren't drinking and flying. They weren't showing up drunk. They weren't showing up with any blood alcohol in their bodies. These are people who either self-report, like, say, Scott's story, or they got a DUI on their own time, and then they get sent down this rabbit hole. So let's talk about, because we want to warn people out there, right? Never self-report. If you have a problem, don't go to your HR. Don't tell your union. Go outside quietly and get help. Mm.
Exactly. That is really the crux of the problem is the HIMS programs, like that, it's company specific. And they're run in the companies by people in the program. So they're, when it comes to addiction problems, they're amateurs.
Mm-hmm.
At the very best, they're amateurs. Many times they're just straight zealots. Like you said, they've just
mm-hmm.
bought off on this. It works for them, that's great, but they shouldn't be making decisions for other people. Not only are they amateurs in the area of substance abuse, but they're amateurs. They're not doctors that interface with the FAA either. And they're convinced the FAA, that's what they told me, the FAA is going to want you. It turns out that was not the case twice.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't have had to do all this, but I went to the union because that seemed like the only thing I should do, and they're on my side. They're not. They are not on your side whatsoever. If you have any problem, whether it be just a reportable incident like a DUI, a DWI, a drunk and disorderly arrest that you have to report, what you really need to do is, because your medical is going to expire, is call out sick. That is legitimate under any union contract. Once
mm-hmm.
you're out sick, the company really has no business knowing, getting in your medical shorts. And then go seek help on your own. Honestly, you probably want to get in touch with you, get in touch with me, and I can recommend some people.
Mm-hmm.
And then if HIMS is for you, that's fine. It might be, I don't know, but at least don't go talking to your own company about it right away, because they're going to send you down a rabbit hole, and you're going to, once you're in it, you're stuck, and
mm-hmm.
there's almost no way out except for getting fired.
Right,
creating
another identity, right? There's one guy who lied for five years and pretended he believed in it all, because you can tell them that you sat in front of a psychiatrist who's a stepper, right?
Oh, yeah.
Was that you?
They're
or
all steppers. I mean, everybody in the whole, and everybody with any decision-making, whatever, is so far been a stepper. And I didn't even know that at the time. The only way I made it through that, I got sent to rehab. The only way I made it through was, I'm former military, was using my practice prisoner of war school skills. I've been to survival, evasion, resistance, and escape, and I played the game. I just kept my head low and managed to make it through without any issues. I know people that spoke up during their thing, and they either get fired or later on something else comes up. Everything that they said in there comes back to haunt them. It's just crazy. But you won't have any say in where you go, what kind of treatment you get, nothing. And with any disease, you should have some say in your own darn treatment. Or if you don't believe it's a disease and you just want some help, some counseling, great, then go. But where pilots get lured also is the companies mostly all pay for this. They don't pay for it if you get cancer. You got to figure out how to pay that through your own insurance, out of your own pocket, whatever. Well, you need to treat any substance abuse problems the same way. And daggone, take care of yourself. If you don't, you really, you're stuck and you got no one to blame but yourself because it was. Now, in the case of me, I would have done something else, but I didn't even know. I had no clue. And you get sucked into it before you know. So this is really only helping people that would listen to this. I might be go looking for some help with substance abuse. People just get stuck with a some people have been turned in by estranged spouses. I think he's drinking too much. Call the company. The company has an intervention. No kidding. A straight up 12-step intervention, and bam, they're in the program.
Wow, you know what else too? Wasn't there was a guy at the who got into a fight at the bar, and he was talking to the bartender, and something happened. He went up to his room, and that bartender sent his bar tab to the company, to the airlines, and said this guy has a drinking problem. Like that happened at a hotel.
That's happened a number of times.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk. One of the things that we know it's so complicated in that you have the FAA, you have the pilots union, you have your company, say it's Delta or American or United, and you have the HIMSS program, you got Birds of a Feather, you got Talbot, you got Casa Del Mar, right? So, but no, I'm going overboard there. But so we have the FAA, we have the pilots union, you have a psychiatrist you got to see, you got HIMSS. I mean, tell us what happened to you and how somebody can avoid the pitfalls.
In my case, I don't know how I would have done it. I was a 20-year veteran in a major airline, 20 years, and I knew nothing about this program. I'm sure it was a one-hour lecture during my new hire training. Mm-hmm. Somehow, 20 years later, that didn't stick with me. So I just get a DWI. I'm required to get a medical every 6 months. Shortly after I got my medical, I got a DWI. I immediately reported it to my aviation doctor. He said, we don't need to worry about this. You got to send in some stuff, and I did. We'll worry about this when we go to renew your physical in 6 months. Okay, 6 months later, I go back, and he looks at my blood alcohol content. It was above the 0.16. That's a guideline I didn't know existed, but it does, which requires a substance abuse professional to conduct an evaluation. So he couldn't approve my medical. Well, it's expiring in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And so he said he had to call the feds. So he does. This is where they just didn't call him back. He's calling them. I'm calling them. Can't get any answers. No one will answer a phone, return an email, nothing, nothing. So I finally call the union. I'm down to a couple of days. I call the union and say, oh, well, it's no problem to call out sick. If your medical expires and you're waiting on the feds to get back with you, that's no problem. But because of this, the way it is, we need you to talk to the person in the HIMSS program. Like, what's that? And mm-hmm. So they call me up and said, yeah, you got to go to treatment. We'll set you up. Can you go tomorrow? I'm like, whoa, what do you mean treatment? What's treatment? Oh, you got to go to rehab. I'm like, what? Well, Mike, you're sick. You got to get treated. I'm like, oh, I'm not that sick. You know, I've been flying for 6 months, no problems. What? I was completely befuddled. I thought, well, rehabbing could be very hard. I'm not addicted to alcohol, so it should be a chance to work out a lot. I had no idea what rehab is like. It is brainwashing and was difficult to get through. And to send someone who doesn't need to be there is hard. It's like taking chemo when you don't have cancer, man.
Oh, my God.
So, and I somehow just stiff-armed them into giving me a couple of weeks to get my crap together and do something with my kids I already had planned, and I drove off to a rehab center, you know, parked my truck in a parking lot and walked in. Had no idea what I was in for. They were going to meet me there, but of course. And so I go into this thing blind. But I had no idea what 12 steps were. I had no idea that AA was was involved with like a rehab center. I thought that was a medical place where you go to detox. No, that's another mess.
Mm-hmm.
Which fortunately I was not involved with. It was a block away. But yeah, so I had no idea I was getting railroaded into this. And the thing is, once you walk through that door and process in, which happens in a few hours, now if you leave, it's going to be against medical advice with people that have some pull with the FAA. Bad deal. Now, what I should have done, if I'd known anything about this, I would have just contacted a HIMSS-qualified AME, and he would have given me real options. Just a regular doctor that had, and this is where my AME should have been probably smarter about than he was and found another AME for me rather than me going to the union. The union, because I talked to nothing but steppers that were union people, they were pilots, line pilots, and said, Mike, you have no choice. You must do this or you will never fly again. When faced with that, you tend to capitulate a little bit. So that's how, and then I was in. I mean,
Second, can I just get this clear just in case someone else has this issue? At the point where, this is at the very beginning, where you went to your, to get your medical, is it physical that everybody gets every 6 months?
Well, you'd have to get it every 6 months or a year, or if you're flying for less than a Part 121, you might only have to get it every couple of years. If you're a pilot command in a Part 121 airline, you have to get it every 6 months.
Okay. So your AME could have said to you, if you knew, you have options. There were no options. It was like, just go down this road.
I didn't talk to an AME. That's what the union told me.
Oh, okay. The union did.
The stepper guys, the line pilots that do this as a collateral duty, told me I had no idea what I had to do, and they were absolutely wrong. I could have just taken a medical leave of absence for 2 years, proved to the FAA I didn't drink for 2 years. I would have never even got a special issuance. I would have just gone back to work.
Oh, wow. Okay, guys, you're listening out there. And lady pilots, that's an option.
Yeah.
The other one is, we've learned so many things from talking to all the different pilots about how many violations, so civil rights violations, HIPAA violations, religious freedom, because AA is highly religious. You went to this place, you went to treatment, and you're there for 28 days, and you used your...
I was there for 42 days. I got extended, and I don't even know why. So there's a bunch of federal pilot or patients' rights violations as well.
Mm-hmm. Patient rights violations. Yep. I'm going to put in some links.
Oh, yeah, they're all over the place. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're there for 40-something days, and then what happens? You get to go back to fly, or you have to go to meetings? You have to go to an IOP?
Well, so once you're done with that, then you start interfacing with your new AME. That's HIMSS trained, and he says, and this is just part of the program, and that is what it is. You need... You sign a contract with your company that has all kinds of egregious things. You got to go to the 90 meetings in 90 days. You got to go to Birds of a Feather. You got to go to weekly group therapy. You got to go to weekly or monthly individual therapy. You got to go to semi-annual, to your AME, all kinds of stuff. And then within the first 90 days there, you also have to get a psychiatric and a psychological evaluation and all this weird testing. And then after about 90 days, that your AME will submit all this information to the FAA, and it takes them about 8 to 12 weeks, and they either say, we're not sure about this, we want you to clarify it, or you're good to go, and they'll give you a special issuance back, a medical, so you can fly again.
You know what? I'm just reading something. This is so horrific. Every time I go on this website, I get so upset. Okay, so I'm on the HIMSS website, and at first I was just going to read like the beginning thing, but I'm going to just read this. It says here, the approach. First there's a list, so there's a bullet list that you need a full-time certified physician, addictionist, credentialist, or certified counselors whom are in substantial recovery themselves. Wow.
Yep.
Acceptance of addiction as a primary disease, insistence on total abstinence, separation of alcohol addicts patients from primary psychiatric patients, psychiatry and psychological consultants a strong family component? Wow, they're telling you that you need a strong family component, reaching into your family recovery base.
Where they signed their children and their spouses up for Al-Anon.
Oh,
they had
God.
To sign a contract that we're going to do it.
This has to be stopped.
Minor
recovery
children
based on the
toxic.
Oh, my God. Okay, so I'm going to just read this little bit. So below that it says approach, right? And it says here, finally, spiritual restoration begins with early exposure to Alcoholics and Narcotics Anonymous, which are mutual help fellowship that embrace 12-step programs. Oh, my effing God. Like, what the hell is the FAA and a union? This is really bad stuff. This is why I'm still going on here with the pilot thing. Okay, so when you came out, you had to go to 90 and 90, which normal people don't do.
Yeah.
Nobody, you know, I mean, that whole thing was like, rehab started to formulate the way AA looked. AA people did not do that. First of all, those kind of meetings didn't exist. You went once a week or something. But, okay, 90-90, and then you had to go to, like, 3 meetings. Or did you keep doing it, or when did you start to resist?
I just kept my head down. And the problem is with requiring abstinence. So in order to test for abstinence, they use what they call ETG, ETS, and PATH testing. We do not have the technology to make sure someone doesn't drink ever, unless you physically watch them. And these tests they use are not FDA approved, and there's a large number of false positives, although they say none exist. I got one, and I stood up and said, they said, no problem, Mike. Go back to treatment for 100 days because you're relapsed. I'm like, I didn't drink. Something wrong with the test. No recourse. No doctor looked at it. I never even spoke to a doctor, never spoke to a counselor, never spoke to a therapist. Just a pilot told me I had to go or I'd get fired. And I said, well, I guess you're going to fire me. And I'm the first guy to apparently ever stand up. Everyone else had too much in the game. They had kids in school or something like that and couldn't afford to lose the job and fight it. Well, I've been fighting it for about a year and a half now. I should have been on disability. I got my medical back on my own without going to treatment, which goes to show that the advice they're giving is bad. It's just flat flawed. But I should have maintained my disability pay until I got my medical back. But they even took that the day they fired me. So they just hung out to dry.
So where are you at now, or can you talk about it?
I have an arbitration hearing coming up in a few weeks. And so my entire career hinges on a 5-man board, 2 company guys, 2 union guys, and a neutral arbitrator. Because of the Railway Labor Act, I'm not allowed to go to court with this. Contractual language is involved, so I have to go to arbitration. And that is binding unless you can convince a court that the ruling was arbitrary or capricious. But the union's not helping me, so I've had to hire my own attorney, my own expert witnesses. And I'm into this for $50,000 or $60,000.
Wow.
With no income from my primary skill set.
Jeez. How many pilots do you think are, you know, forced in this way? Like, do you have any idea?
System-wide, there's probably 1,000 that are currently in a program. Guys that have been unjustly terminated like myself, I mean, I know personally about 15, I mean, any given minute. There's hundreds of people have lost careers over this. That either it just wrecked their home lives. It's kind of funny. A lot of these doctor PhD programs and stuff like that are modeled on the HIMSS program. It's considered so successful. Everyone wants to know why. We have a 90% success rate. Success being that they believe them to be abstinent. And the irony about that is that why are we so much more successful than the rest of the world? The FAA will say because we have leverage. Well, you can't threaten someone who's truly addicted. You can't. They'll do it till it kills them, right?
Right. That's right.
So you can't threaten them. So that's just BS. But you can threaten somebody who's not an addict. So their success rate comes from pushing people through this program who just simply don't meet the diagnostic criteria of being an addict. and they're forced into this program, they have no problem quitting drinking, or if they got busted for smoking pot once in their life, or once since they've been in the airlines, or maybe they smoked a lot, I don't know, but they didn't do anything bad. Most of these people, 90-something, 5% of them or so, you know, did not get caught, you know, intoxicated on an airplane or anywhere near an airplane. There's never been an incident attributed to an impaired pilot because of drugs or alcohol ever. It's just not a problem. I don't, you know, there's irrational fears of it.
So, yeah, except so the guy who flew into the mountain, the German guy, he was proving to them he wasn't perilous because they sent him out to Arizona to a rehab. And I bet you he was like, yeah, you want to see how perilous I am? And flew a whole, you know, plane full of people into the mountain. But I followed that story, and I said, you know, there's something about this. It smells like AA rehab. And when you learn how it's the industry is so filled with it, and you know that everybody's sent there, it's pretty bad. But so it looks like there to be some kind of, you're going to do arbitration, and then are you allowed after arbitration to do a lawsuit?
There are a number of avenues for lawsuits. It just, they can't involve contractual language. So there's the American with Disabilities Act violations that I'm looking into. There's all kinds of malfeasance with the labs that conducted the testing on me, for example.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of patients' rights violations and such with the treatment center that I went to. Malpractice. I mean, bad diagnoses is malpractice. So there's a number of other things to look at. You just can't do them without a lot of means. And that's where most guys just capitulate and roll over. It's very expensive to defend yourself.
Yeah, I would think so. And I think a lot of lawyers don't understand it as we're finding out, you know, that.
Well, it's ironic that I'm doing this tonight because this is how I found you. Is, you know, I heard a podcast you've done a couple of years ago, and that guy had a good fight, a good head on his shoulders, and was trying to help people just like I am.
Mm-hmm.
And he just eventually got tired of it, went underground. And we haven't been able to regain, I've never been able to contact him. I got his name and everything. He put it here, and I've searched and searched, and I understand. Just being over this after years of this, and I mean, it's rough.
You know, they beat him. I mean, they really did. Like we talked about it, and he reached out to me and asked me to remove his name, which I did. He said he hired a lawyer, thought he was going to win. He created a nonprofit. He was really speaking out. He fought and fought and fought. Never got to be a pilot again, and gave up. And you know, the sad thing is that in the early part of this, I guess I was at the end of making the film, so it was like 2014, I had a bunch of doctors call me, and one guy was suicidal, and I remember being on the phone with him and what they were doing to him, and then another guy called me from another state, and he said, she just gave me the 90-second warning, he said he wasn't going to say a word, he wasn't going to fight back because he knew they would get out to destroy him. He could tell what they were like, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. It was really sad.
Well, yeah. So the biggest thing I've got is if anybody has got any kind of questions on this or thinks you're going down this rabbit hole, you're trapped in it and need any kind of help, get in touch with Monica, and she'll put you in touch with me. And we've made quite a network of people. We have lots of resources now.
Yeah, I think so. So just out there, if you're listening, you can contact me at makeaasafer@gmail.com. I know that sounds just so ludicrous, but that's my old email when I was in AA. I've been gone 9 years, if you don't know me and my story, but I left, and I've been trying to help people like this. And so you can reach me there, or you can reach me on Facebook, or you can, I think probably the best way is makeaasafer@gmail.com or through my blog, leavingaa.com. And we have helped some other people by putting other pilots together with other pilots, and we won't say any names, of course, or talk about their stories on air. But it has helped by you guys talking to each other. It has helped, and you can see people through that support and coming together that they don't feel alone. A lot of them think they're just all by themselves. It's like, really, must be really awful. But
I think that other guy was. I think he was pretty much just all on his own. But we're starting to actually network. I've got a bunch of lawyers I could call anytime. I've got some psychiatrists, all kinds of professionals. And I'm actually also helping, and I just helped a guy maintaining custody of his kids because of this testing.
Wait, say that again?
There was a guy who had a bad theft test just like I did, and he stands to lose custody of his children because of it. And I told him, I gave him some very pointed advice to get him good forensic evidence to help clear himself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good, good.
So we have overtly helped a number of people already.
Yeah, we really have. We just keep helping, and I hope to be out that way soon. And I'll talk to you after we get off air. Okay, I'm going to give you a quick call back. But I want to thank Mike for calling in, and I'm going to start. I know you guys, I haven't done a lot of shows. I was busy working on making a second film, a little bit of a short, and it's being edited right now. But we will be back again and do other episodes, and maybe we get some other pilots on. But I want to thank you so much, Mike, and everybody out there. Look forward to seeing you next time on the next channel, the next Safe Recovery episode.
Thank you, Monica.
Hey, you're welcome. Thanks, Mike. Talk to you soon.
Good night. Good night.
Good night, everybody. This is Monica Richardson for Blog Talk Radio on Safe Recovery. See you next time. Bye-bye.